Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Densel. Another beautiful day in Madeira Beach, Florida. I was talking to my landlord about the last time that it rained. And I believe it was like a week and a half ago. It was a Saturday. No, 2.5 weeks ago is, I think, the last time that it really, truly rained here hard. It did rain over in Orlando a little bit before I got there, but this weekend actually over in Orlando was beautiful, and I think it was beautiful over here in the Tampa area as well. I saw her. She was outside, my landlord, watering her flowers or plants, and we were talking about when was the last time that it rained. It's just one of those things. Florida, there's no doubt, gets a ton of rain. Florida is known for its thunderstorms, for its lightning. Next to Sri Lanka, this is true, you can look this up. Next to Sri Lanka, Florida gets hit the most by lightning in the world. Sri Lanka, for some reason, is number one. I don't know what being off the tip of India has anything to do with that. I have no idea, but I think that is the most lightning-struck area of the world. But it's just been beautiful. I went out and threw discs around a little bit yesterday evening. Threw well, felt good even after playing all this weekend, so that was nice. I don't have another tournament until a week and a half from now, so this coming weekend I have free, which is going to be really nice. In other news, speaking of this coming weekend, you got Mother's Day coming up. Have you taken care of it yet? Have you done it yet? Have you ordered those flowers? Have you gone shopping? Don't put it off to the last minute because you might forget. Don't do that to your mother. Don't do it. I've already taken care of my business. I took care of my business last week. I would suggest that you think about taking care of your business today. Just get it out of the way. Just get it out of the way. And so you don't, you know, you're going to forget it. You're going to get to Friday. You're going to look toward the weekend. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. Then Sunday's going to come along. And then you're going to be like, uh-oh. It's May 14th, or whatever it would be, May 13th, whenever it is, and I haven't gotten anything from my mother. That is bad news. Go do it now. So let's go to the show. I wanted to cover this yesterday just as a little bit of a zinger. It's kind of a zinger story, I guess you'd call it. And it's about Trump and his golf courses. And there was this story out, I think this past weekend while I was over in Orlando, that Eric Trump, who is Donald Trump's son, a few years ago was out golfing, and there was a sports writer there. And you can take this for what it's worth. You should know that Eric Trump and Donald Trump and everybody else in the Trump clan has totally denied that this conversation ever happened. In fact, they deny that this is even true. But this sports writer was out there on a golf course. Maybe it's Mar-a-Lago down there in the Miami area, wherever it is, Palm Beach. And what was interesting to this sports writer was that Trump was able to do this at a time building this golf course in the mid-2000s while the rest of the economy was going into the tank because of the housing bubble. There wasn't a lot of financing out there, especially for golf courses. And if you don't know, if you're not a golfer or anything, you might not realize this, but the popularity of ball golf in the United States has been going down. It reached its highest saturation point in the mid-2000s. And you should know that I think ball golf popularity in the last 20 years has mainly been driven by Tiger Woods. Mainly. He brought a lot of new people to the game, a lot of younger people to the game, and he should be thanked for that. And anytime you hear another golfer, even Phil Mickelson, talk about it, he says he's very thankful what Tiger Woods has done to the game. Phil Mickelson, over and over, has said that the reason he's made all this money and everything is because of Tiger Woods. That the purses and all of these tournaments went up, the advertising went up, everybody wanted to watch Tiger, and that's what brought so much money into golf in the mid-2000s, and Tiger won his first major in 1997. But he had been known pretty well before that. But it reached saturation point sometime in the 90s into the early 2000s. And then with the bubble bursting and, you know, there just wasn't as much going on. And then, of course, on top of that, Tiger Woods hasn't won a major since 2008. Most people forget that. That's still mind-boggling that it's been 9 years. But right in the midst of all of these other ball golf courses, and I know this personally from my own experience with disc golf, is that I have played some tournaments in the last 5 years that have been on ball golf courses, specifically over in Daytona, that has its own regular disc golf courses. But I've played on two different disc ball golf courses over there simply because there was nothing going on these ball golf courses. And the guys running the tournaments thought it would be fun to play on a ball golf course and for different reasons. And they're right. And the Daytona tournaments every year since 2013 have been the best, the ones I've enjoyed the most. That's the truth. Although this year I think they're going to go back to a regular disc golf course, which I think sucks. Just me. But the reason the disc golfers have been able to get on ball golf courses, and you can see all the tournaments on YouTube as well, is because a lot of these courses don't have a lot of players on them anymore. And this has been going on for a while. A lot of courses closing up. Country clubs losing members. It's just kind of changed. Just like kind of like NASCAR reached saturation point sometime. It was also affected by the housing bubble that burst. And it still hasn't recovered 10 years later. Neither is golf. But right in the midst of all of this, Donald Trump was building golf courses. And it's getting back to the story. And the sports writer asked Eric Trump, you know, how can you do this? Well, all these other courses are kind of closing up. They're having a problem getting money for funding or whatever, you know, with U.S. banks being hurt by this housing bubble. How are you able to do this? And they said, oh, no. We don't use U.S. banks. We use Russian banks. See the zinger? Told you it was coming. We use Russian banks for all of this. We don't mess around with U.S. banks. We have good relationships with these Russian banks, and they're the ones who have financed what we've been doing with these golf courses, while everybody else, you know, has been going the opposite direction. And this was, I'll remind you once again, because this story got a little long, that this story happened, I think, like 5 years ago or something like that. And this is just, I guess, coming out now. I don't know if the sports writers never mentioned it before. It could be a total lie, being that sports writers tend to be very liberal, even more, way more liberal than you'd ever realize, I think. It could be just one more way for him to, you know, a liberal to get at the Trump administration and bring out this story. I don't know if this writer has ever mentioned that before. I have no idea. But it's out there now, and it is a kind of a funny story. But you should know that the Trumps have come out. They've said that story never happened. That statement was never said. And not only that, but they're saying that they never got any financing from Russian banks or anything. Well, that should be easy to find out. If somebody's going to really dig into that, that would be probably pretty easy to determine how they got the financing to do all this. They're saying that they did it all out of their own pocket. Yes, the U.S. banks were hurting in the 2000s. You couldn't get any financing anything, let alone a golf course. And they're saying that they did all this with their own money. That's the Trump story. Now, to me, that sounds a little hard to believe. And that's what causes me to kind of think that this sports writer story actually might be true. Simply because I don't believe that Donald Trump and his people financed all of this on their own. I don't believe that. Especially at that period of time in the 2000s. like 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And I think that if the Trump people had gotten their had gotten their financing from U.S. banks, they would be more than happy to mention that. That would be a great selling point for them, that they went to the U.S. banks to do this and were able to work together to make this happen. They didn't say that either. So I wonder. I really, really wonder. Now, what does this mean next to the election of 2016, the presidential election of 2016? Probably nothing. But it is, you just keep finding all these ways that the Trump administration is connected to Russia. Rex Tillerson with the medal that he got, Jared Kushner, his dealings. Just on and on and on. Flynn talking to the Russians and not telling Mike Pence about it. It's quite a trip. It is quite a trip. So that story is out there. Maybe you want to check that out for yourself. Let's move on to something else. Sally Yates was testifying to a committee yesterday of senators. And she was asked about all that went on. Remember how that happened, is that if you don't remember who she is, she was the acting attorney general when Donald Trump became president. If you remember, of course, Barack Obama was president. And when he ceased to be president, all of his cabinet members ceased to hold their positions. So Loretta Lynch, who was the attorney general, lost her job. She was not asked to continue in that position by the Trump administration, which of course makes total sense. And if you'll remember before her, it was Eric Holder. Well, Jeff Sessions, who is now the attorney general, had not been confirmed yet. That still had yet to happen. But right within those first few days of Donald Trump being president, he signed that executive order for a travel ban. Remember all that? Seems like yesterday. It's one of those things. It either seems like it was yesterday or everybody's already forgotten about it. It's one or the other. To me, it seems like yesterday. But how all the problems that caused, the people with green cards couldn't get back into the United States, and all these people, these jam-ups at the airport, and allegedly Homeland Security guy wasn't asked about it. The Department of Defense wasn't asked about it. Just kind of happened. And all the hubbub and the problems that it caused. And then you'll remember more recently that an altered executive order is now out there. But Sally Yates is now up in front of Congress, and she was in front of the Senate and asked about this. Because she was the acting attorney general. She was a holdover from the Barack Obama administration. She was under Loretta Lynch, which doesn't sound like a very nice place to be. And she was the one that, you know, when all this was happening and there was lawsuits being filed, she made the statement that she was not going to defend the executive order in court. As acting attorney general, she was not going to do that, even though she is supposed to. And see, that's, you know, it's a very interesting part of the way things work in the United States. I don't know how it goes on, what goes on in other countries. Like Justin Trudeau, when he became prime minister, and I'm sure there was a lot of shifting in cabinet positions, how that all works. But in our form of government, the government is expected to defend, or the administration, being that the Department of Justice, the Attorney General is in the executive department, executive branch of government. It is expected to defend laws that it itself doesn't like, or thinks that it's unconstitutional or illegal, or even if Donald Trump had run on the exact opposite of something, it would still be expected that if the prior administration had done something, a law, and it was working its way through the courts, when Barack Obama, and then it became Trump's administration, a new attorney general. The attorney general under Donald Trump is expected to continue to defend the law. Very strange. Very counterintuitive of the way you think things would work. But if you think about it, when you remember that we are a law of nations, a nation of laws, not of men, it makes perfect sense. We have mechanisms in the United States to pass laws and to repeal laws, to amend the Constitution and to one way and then roll it back later, like prohibition, for example, or how senators are selected to the Senate. The states don't do it anymore. The state governments don't do it anymore. The actual people of each state get to vote on senators. That's also a change in the Constitution from the original Constitution. Of course, with slavery, that's something else. We have mechanisms to change things, whether through amendments, through laws, through repeals, going the whole way to the Supreme Court. That's the way things are supposed to work. It's not supposed to be up to one person, in this case, Sally Yates, to just decide that she didn't want to defend something simply because she didn't like it. Well, I made the comment at the back then in January when this happened. There's no downside for Sally Yates. Now what happened was that she didn't want to defend it, and she got fired. That's what happened. And of course, Jeff Sessions eventually became Attorney General, although it took a little while. Well, there was no downside for her because she's, as a liberal and being part of the prior administration, in the department of the prior administration, she's going to get to do all sorts of book tours and speaking tours, and every liberal in the country is going to love her for doing that. There was no downside, even if what she was doing, I wouldn't necessarily say it was unconstitutional, but there's just different expectations of what the Attorney General is supposed to do. And so she is now up in front of Congress, and her tune has changed. Going back, you know, at the time she had made a statement, she put it in writing. She was very, I mean, we know what she was thinking, but she was very nebulous. She didn't just come right out and say it, not like I'm telling it to you. Well, she is now up in front of the Senate, and they are asking her about this. And now she's saying that exactly what I thought. Now she's even being more honest. She's being more honest now. She's coming right out and saying that the reason that she didn't want to defend the executive order that Trump made in court is because she personally didn't believe it was legal. She didn't say that back then. She's saying it now. I said it back then. She just wouldn't admit to it. But she's admitting it now, which she's confirming something that I said back then. And I'm not saying I'm some genius. It's just easy to sit here and see that. Because once again, there's no downside to it. She's not going to go to jail because of it. Or anything. She's not going to get fined. She's just going to get fired. She's going to be fine. She's going to work for some great law firm. She's going to make a ton of money. She's going to be a liberal icon. And she's going to... When the best thing that ever happened to Sally Yates, and maybe her life, not just her professional work career, but in her life, was when Donald Trump signed that executive order. That's the best thing that ever happened to her. I mean, let's just, you know, say it for what it is. But she's now saying that she didn't think that it was legal, but also that she didn't believe that, she's also making the statement that if they had gone to court and the Justice Department, with her heading it up at the time, she said that no truthful argument could have been made for the executive order. So I guess what she's saying is that she didn't want to put herself and the other lawyers that would have been working on that in a position where they had to lie. That is what she is saying. And the reason I'm talking about this, I mean... I don't know how big of a story is it out there, you know, Sally Yates. I think that what's going on with healthcare and some other stories are a bigger deal. North Korea are probably a bigger deal than the Sally Yates story. But in seeing her statement that no truthful argument could be made, she said this. She was asked about this in the Senate yesterday, and this is the answer that she gave. It's not that she just thought it was illegal, but she just thought that there was no truthful argument that could be made to defend it. This gives you insight into liberals. This is very, very interesting to me. I think that what it shows, and the response, you should know that she said this, and I think that some of the senators who were talking to her, you know, kind of attacked her on at least the article I was reading. I was reading this at the lawfareblog.com, which I don't think that I've ever been to before, but I think the guy's last name was Goldsmith that wrote this article. But he points out, as I would point out, that what she is essentially doing is just calling all a bunch of conservatives and everybody a liar. I want you to know for the record, I think the executive order was a bad idea. I think that Donald Trump had a constitutional right to do it. I'm not going to argue with that. He perfectly had an opportunity. It is the executive branch's job to handle something like this. I think constitutionally he could do that. I think it was just stupid. I think the way it came about was stupid. I think that all the problems that it caused were perfectly predictable. But, you know, just because something is constitutional doesn't mean it's non-stupid. I think that it was Antonin Scalia who said something like that. Of course, he said it more eloquently. But this gives you sight into liberals, is that they just think that we are a bunch of liars. I think that it's not just true. And what this guy, where this guy was going, was saying, you know, does Sally Yates not know that there have been a lot of people who have come out and have made truthful arguments about this? Now, everybody, you know, you can be truthful and still wrong. I mean, that's always a possibility on any topic in life. But what Sally Yates is doing is she's calling out conservatives for even thinking this way as being liars. I think that this is good insight. This is good insight into how we think, what they think we think. That we surely, when we talk about, and I think that you can apply this to any topic. I think it has to do with abortion, has to do with taxes, regulation, everything else. They think that our true motives are something other than what we state. That they can't even conceive of anything other than what they think. It's gotten to the point for them that they think we are liars. Here's one thing I know. Liberals aren't liars. They may, to market something, they may lie, but everybody lies to do marketing. In private business, Coca-Cola, anything, cars, it's all a bunch of fluff. But I don't think that liberals are liars about what they think. When they talk about abortion, I believe they do believe in abortion. When they talk about global warming, climate change, and everything, I think they do believe it. And I also think, though, that they will lie to get their way. Now, I think they're wrong. I think they're wrong on abortion. I think they're wrong on climate change. But I think that they believe it. With liberals, I think it's becoming increasingly clear that they don't even think we believe what we say we believe. I think that probably abortion is a great example. No matter how many times we insist that we are not in the business of invading women's bodies, instead we truly believe that life begins at conception. They don't believe that we believe that. Instead, they believe that we just want to control women's bodies and. That's what I know it's kooky. I know there's no proof of that. But I think that's really, really, really what they think of us. And I think that it somehow somewhat explains why they can be so enraged. I think it does. Not only do they disagree with us on the political issue, but they think that we are misrepresenting our position on purpose as if we have nefarious ideas behind the scenes, which we don't. It's the same thing with climate change. They believe that the Earth is going to get so hot to the point that we're all going to fry somewhere down the road. Maybe not in my lifetime, but somewhere down the road. And when we say that, well, we're a little bit skeptical about that. We're not sure. We know there's been some temperature changes this way and that way. And back in the 70s, we thought there was going to be an ice age. And now it's completely flipped. We are just, the jury is still out regarding all of that. At best, the jury is still out. In fact, we as conservatives, looking at how climate scientists, we've discovered them lying and everything over the years, it's only caused us to think that there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation out there. Now, to liberals, what that sounds like is we just don't want to do it because we believe it's going to hurt business, and we believe business is more important than the Earth. And we're perfectly fine with the Earth, you know, turning to ashes, burning up in ashes, as long as business gets to continue. That's what they've convinced themselves of. Which isn't the case at all. And it's funny, we're talking about this because I was listening to I'm actually talking about it. You're listening. Yesterday, I was listening to the Commentary Magazine podcast, one of my favorites. And they were talking kind of about this same issue regarding climate change. And I think it was John Podoretz who said, do these really people really think that we want the Earth to burn up? Is that what they really, really think? You know, do they think that these businesses are willing to trash the Earth and make the temperature go up 100 degrees and everything just so they can make another buck? Well, it's not like these businesses and people are going to be able to save themselves when it happens. Why would they do that? And they had a discussion for a little bit about that. That's what comes to mind, and various other political topics come to mind, when I go back to what Sally Yates said. She cannot conceive that somebody could be truthful in their belief that something needs to be done about people entering this country. She believes, instead, that any argument that you would have to use to defend it would have to be a lie. Then there's no conceivable way you could tell the truth and defend it, which is crazy. And I think that her statement, and keep in mind, this is also one of those instances, and I've brought this up before, when other people have gone up in front of Congress. You know, going back, I mean, Jonathan Gruber, remember the healthcare guy? I didn't get to talk about him yesterday, but he was in my notebook. All of these people know that they're going to appear in front of Congress or in front of some committee. They almost can kind of guess 95% of the questions, probably. They know why they're being called up there. They know that if you're a Democrat, you're going to get a hard time for the Republicans, and the Democrats are going to kiss your butt. And if you're a Republican, the Republicans are going to kiss your butt, and the Democrats are going to give you a hard time. Everybody knows this. It's not like Sally Yates was just walking along the street yesterday or the day before, and somebody tapped her on the shoulder and said, hey, tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. in front of the Senate, don't be late. She had plenty of time to prepare for this. She probably knew what the questions were going to be. And this is the best that she can do regarding this topic. And what I think that says is that the reason this is the best that she can do is because she literally believes it. And I don't like using that L word too much, but she literally believes it. And she doesn't realize by saying it how naive and myopic she is. I have to say, she would have been much better off to stick to her story from January and being nebulous and evasive and everything else, probably. However, it does give us a gift. This is a teaching moment for all of you conservatives, that you have to remember that many times when you are arguing liberals about whatever you believe, they don't believe your motivations. Whatever you say they are, they don't believe them. They believe that you always have some nefarious thing underneath that will be exposed, I guess, somewhere down the road. But I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. Anytime I can give you insight into how liberals view you, I'm going to do that. And maybe the Sally Yates testimony is something you might have blown off or said, oh, her again, or don't think it's important. Isn't that water under the bridge and everything? I think that you can learn something from that. Just like I think that we learned a lot about liberals when Lois Lerner testified, when Jonathan Gruber testified, when these people are called up before Congress and are asked pointed questions, you can learn a lot. You learn more about these people in however many hours they're up there than you would learn about them for the rest of their lives just seeing little clips of them. You certainly can't tell what makes them tick. And they are certainly arrogant, and they are certainly know-it-alls, and holier than thou. And just safe to say, I think that they'd probably try to get away with even more if they could. That's my opinion. So anytime these people are going to appear up in front of Congress, we need to keep an eye on it. I think you can learn something. Let's move on to something else. There's a conspiracy out there. I don't know if Rush needed to just fill up time on his show. Maybe he didn't have a lot to talk about. Lord knows I feel that sometimes on this program, and all I have to do is talk for an hour. He, of course, doesn't speak for 3 hours. If you really map it out, he only does talking for about an hour and 40 minutes. Once you get in the stuff at the top of the hour and then the commercials and him talking to his producer and joking around, you only get about a quality hour and a half of material, really. You check it for yourself. In any case, he has put this conspiracy out there that there was something that went on last week, the end of last week. And this has been right around the time that I was getting ready to go to Orlando, that Macron, or is it Macron, the guy who ended up winning the presidential election, he leaked his own emails. This happened at the end. Allegedly Russian hackers or somebody got into his email and released all these emails. I have no idea what these emails even said. And of course, the belief is that the National Front Party, the National Front Party, I had somebody tell me yesterday that I got her name wrong, and I did. And it's probably just out of me not caring that much what her first name is. I keep saying Marie Le Pen. It's Marine Le Pen. Like in English, if you're talking about the water, a marine, or a person in the military, a Marine, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. Her first name is Marine, M-A-R-I-N-E, not Marie, M-A-R-I-E. Marine, M-A-R-I-N-E. And I probably did that, like I said, because I just don't like her. I don't take her seriously. That's probably the way it is. But the other guy, the other candidate, the guy, Macron, he had his emails hacked, allegedly by Russians, and the reason this is pertinent is because in the past, the Le Pens, both Marine Le Pen and her father, they were very, very friendly with the Russians. People believe that Le Pen's are anti-Semitic, and then that goes along with them being friends with the Russians, and on and on and on. And so when this email hack happened at the end of last week or middle of last week, there was a belief out there that Le Pen was behind it. And this was a way to scare people into, you know, showing how, you know, that they need somebody tougher than Macron. How can you trust a guy like Macron if he can't even protect his own email? Which sounds kind of familiar here with the election we just had. And so there was a belief that the Russians, along with Le Pen, were behind it. Now Rush, I guess yesterday on his program, floated the idea, no, that's not what happened. What might have probably, possibly, allegedly could have, maybe, probably, possibly 1% chance have happened, is that Macron himself leaked his own hacked emails, meaning there was no hacking that actually went on. It was just he and his campaign made it look like it was a hacking to make to remind people of how close Marine, M-A-R-I-N-E, Le Pen is close to the Russians, and how you don't want a leader of France to be that friendly with the Russians. When really there was no hacking that happened. This is an idea that Rush Limbaugh, of all people, floated on his program yesterday. Every time I hear this, I think back to something that I've been saying, I don't know, year and a half. Of course, I've been saying a lot about conservative media in general the past year and a half about how I think it's gone in the wrong direction. I think that conservative media, as much many listeners and viewers it's had over the last 25 years, I don't know what we have to show for it. I know a lot of people made a lot of money. I know advertisers have made a lot of money. I know we've sold a lot of beds and reverse mortgages and gold and everything else. I know a lot of people have made a lot of money. I don't know what's actually been done for conservatism. That would be very, very hard to measure. Because I come to this microphone selling conservatism. I'm not selling anything else. I don't have any sponsors. I don't have any Patreon. Nothing. I'm selling conservatism. That's what I sell. But I do know that these people have made a lot of money selling a lot of stuff very successfully. And I guess not selling conservatism, they haven't been doing it very well. Because the country continues to creep in a non-conservative direction. So when I hear that he's talking about conspiracies, I am then reminded of the other point that I've made, is that I predicted that Donald Trump winning this election would taint everybody who came in contact with him, no matter how conservative that person is, that somehow one way or another you would get caught up in the hurricane that is Donald Trump. You know, I know these stories, you know, from living here in Florida for the last 5.5 years, that there's always that one person who thinks he or she can ride out the storm. They have a house right on the water. The eye is going to come ashore right where their mansion is. And that person has convinced himself or herself, I'm going to ride this out. Everybody else is leaving. Everybody else is going inland. Everybody's going to shelters, everything else. This person's going to ride it out just because. And then you come back a couple days later after the hurricane's gone, the mansion's gone, the person's gone, dead. But that person is convinced that he or she is different from everybody else. And I think this is the analogy that I would use with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the hurricane, and it was focused right on conservatism, and a bunch of conservatives convinced themselves, we can ride this out. I don't mind that hurricane at all. In contrast to others like myself who said, I see this Donald Trump guy coming, I'm getting out of the way. I want no parts of him. I don't want to feel him. I don't want to even feel a breeze from this guy. I don't want to feel one raindrop. I don't want to see one rain cloud. Nothing. That's how far I'm getting away from him. Others convinced themselves that it was best for them to just stick it out, to show how brave they are, that they won't be afraid. I'm not afraid of Donald Trump. I'm not afraid of a little hurricane. Not exactly my favorite form of weather, but I'm going to ride this thing out. And now we see everybody's caught up in it to the point where now we have Rush Limbaugh creating voting conspiracies about a French election where a candidate lost by 30 points. You know, and here we are, as conservatives making fun of Hillary Clinton for saying that the election was stolen from her by Russians. And she only lost, I mean, you know, she didn't lose by that much. I mean, she got more of the popular vote. In the popular vote, she won by 3 million. She just didn't get those votes in the right area. She didn't lose by that much. And we make fun of her for thinking that the election was stolen from her. But then one of our conservative leaders turns around and says that Marine Le Pen might have lost the election because of a conspiracy, and she lost by 30 points. Do you not see the hypocrisy of it? We make fun of the conspiracy theory that Hillary Clinton lost by a little bit, but then you buy into the theory that Marine Le Pen, you know, might have lost the election because of conspiracy, and she lost by 30 points. Yes, I'm sure that's what did it, Rush. We're just caught up in this right now. Conservatism is caught up in this hurricane that is running across the United States right now. Too many conservatives said they were going to stick around. And it is a good analogy, given that Rush Limbaugh does live in West Palm Beach that does get hit by hurricanes. And I don't know if he sticks around or not. I've known it. Being the rich guy he is, I'm sure he can go anywhere he likes. But too many conservatives knew that the path that Hurricane Trump was on, Hurricane Donald, I guess you'd call it, was on, and they said, we're going to ride this out. And now they're caught up in the winds. They're being blown this way and that, and they're just having this great time. Look how fun this is. Look at the trees outside. They're bending at 45 degrees. Oh, there goes, you know, the birds are being flown. This is just the greatest thing ever. And it's not. This is horrible for conservatism. And those times that they say that, you know, Donald Trump is doing, you know, something's going the right way for conservatives. Well, that's just like saying, well, you know what? The hurricane was blowing, you know, the winds were blowing in a north direction. Well, you know what? Now it's better. Now they're blowing in a south direction. Oh, yeah, that's much better. Doesn't mean anything. I see these stories about Donald Trump not getting along with H.R. McMaster. I see this story about NAFTA. Donald Trump wants to end NAFTA. Is this true? I mean, I know that it's crossed his mind. But then the other Trump staff had to call Justin Trudeau and tell him, hey, can you talk to some sense to our boss about this? He wants to totally scrap NAFTA. Can you talk to him about this? Remember when all of you, and you, I guess many of you still believe me, that, you know what, those cabinet members, they're going to be able to keep control of Donald Trump. Look at all these great cabinet members that Donald Trump picked. He's just going to let them do the work. Oh, really? Oh, really? How naive are all of you? I mean, I know that you're all adults out there. How naive are you who have thought that? This is Donald Trump's show. More to the point, this is Donald Trump's reality show. He is the star. On his show, it wasn't somebody else that fired the contestants. It was he who fired the contestants. Yes, his daughter was sitting there. Other people would sit beside him. He is the one who pulls all the levers. He has the buttons, he has the controls, he has the knobs, he has the switches, he has the turn signals, he has the fog light switch, you know, he controls the radio and the air conditioning and the heated seats, and he got it all. He got it all. You guys are so cute thinking that they were just going to do it. He's just going to put people in the right positions and they're just going to let him, you know, he's just going to let them do whatever he wants. This is, you know what this reminds me of? I did an interview for a show that used to be on Red State Talk Radio. It's not there anymore. But this kind of thinking is just as idiotic as when I was on this other program. And I'm not going to say her name. The woman said to me, wouldn't it be great? Donald Trump is president. Ted Cruz is attorney general. This person, that person, this person, that person. I said, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You know, it's not going to happen. And I was right, first of all. And I also made the point that Donald Trump is going to run the show. It doesn't matter who any of these people are. And it's not because he is Donald Trump. It's because that's the way the presidency is, no matter who is there. The cabinet members are just a reflection of the president. He doesn't do what they say. They do what he says. So who they are pretty much doesn't matter. I would give you the most extreme example that I can think of. If I were to become president and I made Nancy Pelosi my attorney general, now do you think that I'm going to do what she says, or is she going to do what I say, and if she doesn't, I'm going to fire her? What do you think? What do you think? Moreover, if Barack Obama had tried to appoint, let's be not just mention him, Ted Cruz to attorney general. Do you think that Ted Cruz would be running the show, would be telling Barack Obama what to do? Or would you think that Barack Obama would be telling Ted Cruz what to do? And if Ted didn't do it, Barack Obama would fire him. What do you think? We know what the answers are to those analogies. So then how can you say, and the argument you made for so long, that you thought the cabinet members were going to be able to control Donald Trump? That's crazy. It's crazy. But Rush and Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity and all these people convinced you of this. And now we're to the point where Rush is throwing out conspiracy theories about an election in France where a woman lost by 30 points and he thinks she got ripped off by some conspiracy, by some hacking that never happened. I don't know. I don't know, guys. It's pitiful. I'm totally, totally embarrassed. Totally embarrassed. But let's move on to something else. Being that I brought up NAFTA, I remember when NAFTA got passed back in the mid-90s, and of course Ross Perot didn't think it should happen, and those were bizarre days. For those of you who were too young, those were some wild days with NAFTA, because you were getting to the point where Al Gore was saying nice things about Rush Limbaugh, being that I also just mentioned Rush. That happened. That Al Gore said Rush Limbaugh was a great leader or whatever he said about him for going up for supporting NAFTA. That actually happened. I mean, that's 22 years ago. That is crazy. I mean, it was crazy then. It even seems it's way more crazy now. And the truth is this, that all those people who ushered all those dire predictions about what NAFTA was going to do to the American economy, they were all wrong. All of them. There hasn't been one true thing that has happened in any of that at all. Zero. Zero. But Donald Trump thinks it's a bad deal. And, you know, me personally, I don't, you know, now I will say that being that I was roughly 25 at the time when it happened, I don't know how much of an effect NAFTA has had on my personal life in the last 20 some years. I have no idea. I haven't been in manufacturing. I haven't owned a business that I don't know. But being that I can say that I haven't felt any of its effects, that I tend to believe that overall it's been pretty good for the United States. Overall, it's been pretty good. And so that somebody wants to scrap it just because he, Donald Trump, thinks it's a bad deal, I start thinking other thoughts about this. Is this something, you know, is this going to be just like China, you know, China's a currency manipulator and then suddenly meets with the president of China and suddenly China's not a currency manipulator? Is this the way it's going to go? You know, I think this is going to be one more of those cases where all of you people who voted for Donald Trump and thought he was going to come down hard on China, you know, you're going to be let down. And you're going to say, well, you were wrong. You said, you know, these trade. I lose either way. You have to remember something. I don't win when presidents lie to get elected. Neither do you. You've just convinced yourself that you do. Nobody wins. Nobody wins in any of this. All of this manipulation and saying things just to get a rise out of people, to control the media cycle. Nobody wins except the person doing it. That you bought into it, that's your problem. Whether it was the currency manipulation or the trade barriers or believing that NAFTA or the wall or and all of these things, I look at all of these things from a conservative point of view, and that's why I argue against most of them. I don't hate the wall idea because Donald Trump came up with the idea. I hate the wall idea because I don't know if that's exactly how you control immigration between Mexico and the United States. I'm not sure about that. On top of that, then, my own experience outside of politics, outside of my conservatism, tells me probably it's not going to get done just because. You were the ones who believed it. You were the ones to the point who believed that Mexico is going to pay for it. That's never going to happen. And all of this stuff. I mean, it's even gotten to the point now where, you know, we have this thing that passed the House. It's not going to change Obamacare barely at all. And now all Trump voters are in favor of it just because he likes it. In the end, we're all going to get what we deserve. Pretty much in our lives, we get what we deserve. People get lucky. People hit Powerball. You know. Fat guys marry supermodels. I guess those things happen. But pretty much in our lives, and I know it's unfortunate, I do another show about missing persons, and it's unfortunate, every one of those, it's all horrible. Those stories are all horrible. But even so, I'd usually put my money on everybody is going to eventually get what we deserve. That's the safe bet. And the United States, as a country, is going to get what it deserves when its people give in to people, you know, who vote for people with no character, who are liars. And then on top of that, people who aren't conservative. We deserve whatever we get, no matter how horrible it is. No matter. Because we had other choices that we could made very easily, and we didn't make them. And when that happens, somebody needs to pay. And it's going to be all of us eventually. But I got to go. EdwardDensel.com is the website. You can find this show on Podomatic and iTunes. And you can find it on Twitter, USA Podcast. You can find it Monday or Tuesday through Saturday, 2 a.m. Eastern or whenever it's playing now. Just look for it late at night on the East Coast. At Red State, RedStateTalkRadio.com. my other show, Unfound, Missing Persons Program. Find it at Podomatic and iTunes. Find it on Twitter, Unfound Podcast. I got to go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.